Did I?
Eins.
Oh, he's counting in German. Watch out, you guys.
Backwards. Backwards.
Wow, that's impressive.
I've learned so much.
Yeah. All the numbers.
All the numbers. Great. Backwards.
So this is Carl Becker. Very exciting that he's here. If you guys remember during our month praying for the persecuted church, Molly and I were up here, and Molly talked about how she lived with Carl for a little bit, Molly Kay, and I mentioned up in Paradise that he was my 6th through 8th grade English middle school teacher.
So those are good years.
That was really fun. We started 6th grade together.
Yes, we did. I'm still there.
Yeah. He's still there. It's crazy. So I'm excited to have Carl here. It feels like really exciting for me and fun. But I just want to kind of get an update about your family and who they are, what you've been up to. Kind of give us a little.
Well, I've got a slide. Let's show the slide of the family real quick. This is the 10-year challenge. Thought I would share this with you. It's been a little while. We left from this church, and it's full circle. It's 10 years. I left when I was 41. I'm going to be 51 when I leave. I cannot even believe I just said it out loud. I'm not supposed to say it out loud. I usually let people guess, and they say, oh, you can't be more than 20. So let's see the mid-range, the home assignment picture. That's 2014, so a few years later. And today. Yeah, that was at around Christmas time. Got an extra member in the family now. Got a lady. So on the left there, the farthest over, is my son Jade. He's 25, just finished his master's degree at OSU. His wife right next to him, Bree, in the middle of her doctoral program in physical therapy. She's about to finish in April. And they're finally just be able to work. And they'll be incredibly busy just working, but not be doing both work and graduate school will be a huge relief, I think, to them. My daughter Ava there next to Laurel. Ava's going to West Salem High School in Salem, Oregon. Last place on earth I ever thought I would want to live. I'm convinced that was the right opinion. I won't say that when I'm there, though. Just here. Don't tell anybody. My wife there, she is actually a graduate student right now as well. God's been leading her for many years to pursue a degree in counseling, and she's in her master's degree at Colorado Christian University online program for a professional licensed counselor degree. So she will be finished with her internship the day before we leave for Kenya. So she's not here right now because that's what she's doing. So. Then that guy with the receding hairline, that's me. Then the guy on the other side with not a receding hairline, that's my middle son, Logan, and he is 21, studying music at the University of Oregon. And that was quite a flash, 10 years. Yeah. 10 years and 2 minutes.
I love that photo, the before and after.
Yeah.
I just kind of want it so I can just be in awe of how much
you guys
have changed.
I wonder what it's going to look like in 10 more years.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I want to see.
Yeah. And you will be how old?
No, oh, no, no. We're not going to happen.
Let's not go down that road.
I'm not going that long.
Well, this is super exciting. Tell us a little bit about the ministries you've been involved in you were in Rift Valley Academy, and then you moved to Germany. There's been a lot of shifts. And then you've been here for half a year. So just kind of give us a little
We've been involved in a number of different ministries. Like she said, we started with Rift Valley Academy in Kenya, where I was an English teacher for 7th and 9th grade students. We were dorm parents for a couple years to 22 high school boys. I'm never doing that again, but it was good to learn. It's always good to learn. I don't learn by people telling me things. I'm obstinate. I always have to do it, and then I find out, yeah, that was a bad idea. That was not a good idea. I've been involved with refugee ministry in Germany through the kind of an unusual avenue, taking language courses in German. There weren't the opportunities that really fit to just walk into, why is the alarm going off? I just started. Never mind. I said it for the wrong time. We found that the easiest way to interface, or the easy way for me to interface, was to actually be in class and come into a situation one-on-one at an equal level, instead of me, the missionary, coming into the refugee center and helping the poor refugee. Not that that isn't important as well, but it didn't fit my temperament and my style of ministry. So there we are sitting around these big tables with a teacher saying something in front of us and us trying to figure out what it was. And we got to really struggle through things together. And I think shared struggle, I think you might recognize this in your recent experience, is a really good way to bond with people. And that was what happened. So And then I've been involved in international ministry with Proclaim, doing, helping small churches around the world to do outreach and evangelism in the streets by sharing music and visual arts with them. We work with local ministries because we want lasting partnerships that are going to result in discipleship down the road. We just provide an extra tool for them to use as we join alongside them in ministry that they're already doing. And and this year we're on a home assignment. It used to be called a furlough, as if to imply some kind of rest was involved. It's a different kind of work. I mean, I'm working in construction right now. My wife is doing her internship at a community mental health clinic, Catholic Community Services. My daughter's going to public school, and that is a ministry in itself as well. So we're all sort of in the middle of that, and shortly after returning, we realized that God was calling us back to Rift Valley Academy.
Yeah. And when do you head there? When is the timeline for that?
We bought tickets last week. August 5th is our departure date.
Wow, so it's coming up.
It is.
That's awesome. What are you kind of looking forward to while you're there?
Well, it's going to be a new capacity that we're working in. I'm not going to be a classroom teacher anymore. I will be working as kind of a coordinator or administrator for academic needs for students who are struggling with different things. And so I'll be working with parents, students, and administrators to connect students with the help that they need to do well in their courses. Laurel's going to be working as a women's counselor for the students there, one of a staff of three people that will be doing that. And Ava's getting to go for the best years at RVA, which are junior and senior years. She'll be able to participate in a lot of great activities, including international ministry trips, where she'll go to different countries or different locations within Kenya to participate in a ministry that's going on there with a group of her peers. It's a pretty fantastic opportunity. Short-term missions.
Very cool. Well, I'm excited. Now, this is the part where I leave Carl up here alone. I know it's kind of weird to have a interview style for preaching. So you get to kind of take the stage, which is very exciting, and let us kind of hear some of your personal journey, how you got to this place of even getting on the mission field, the way God has worked in your life. Okay. So I'm really excited to leave you up here.
She's doing so well. She's doing a great job.
Please dismiss your children.
Don't come back.
I'm sure Josh
can give me that on the Well, I have butterflies, you guys. I've longed for you in a way I can't really describe, but that I was really in touch with this week as I visited with good friends. Right before going to the open house over at Nancy's, I kind of had a little breakdown in the car, and I realized I was just feeling torn in 1,000 places. You know, I just felt like I was everywhere, all over the world, literally all over the world. My heart's in all these different places, and, you know, I'm even here without my family. So there's a sense that I realized kind of what had been sacrificed in the process of being obedient to what I believed God was calling us to do 10 years ago, and what I believe he's still calling us to do and participate in. And I have butterflies because I'm really excited about sharing it with you, and I don't want to mess it up. So I hope that I don't speak too fast. I feel like I have a lot to say, but I really want to share my journey with you because I think it might be tempting to look at someone who's going on the mission field, who's been out a while, as some kind of hero of the faith or super Christian or something like that. That's what I used to think. I used to think, oh man, those guys, Africa? What? Who lives in Africa? But they must not have any physical needs whatsoever. They must not have any temptations. They don't care about all this stuff here. They just want to go. They don't want to be here. So I want to just kind of go back. And I'm gonna talk to you about a verse, one of many, many verses from the mouths of Jesus that gave me a lot of internal struggle. I don't find reading the Gospels always to be that peaceful for me. I am convicted by a lot of what I read. Maybe that's true for you as well. I don't necessarily see the Jesus that Paul sees when he's talking about grace and forgiveness and this gift. I know it's there, and I've experienced it, and that's why I do what I do. But when I read the words of Jesus, I see someone that's asking me to do something. He's not just saying, okay, you're good. Do whatever you want, and I'll see you in 50, 60 years, whatever. take it easy. Hope it goes well. That's not what I read. When I look at the Sermon on the Mount, I don't see that. And when I look at the end of Matthew, chapter 29, 19 through 20, Jesus tells disciples to go. He says, go. Now that can be, well, that's a paraphrase. He says more than that. For me, it was one of those messages that wouldn't go away. And it may be that way for you as well. And I don't think, even though he says to all the nations, I don't think he means necessarily travel across the sea, because the context of the writing is really not there. I mean, there wasn't this concept of traveling across the ocean to different people groups and that kind of thing. I mean, I think it's critical to our understanding of the Great Commission, but it's not the only interpretation of it. But listen, I looked at it and I said, okay, so he says, go to all the nations or all the peoples of the earth, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Teach these new disciples to obey all the commands I have given you, just like I do. So that's easy. And be sure of this. This is the good news. I am with you always, even unto the end of the age. And that is the part that comforts me in the process of all my failure and not doing what I believe I'm supposed to be doing. This is a haunting verse for me. And it's not one that would let me go until I did something about it. See, I grew up in a home that pretty much hated the church, hated God as far as I could tell, and really encouraged me to do the same. I don't feel like I had a very positive lift into this Christian life. My dad used to turn on Oral Roberts on Sunday mornings and just cuss at him. I'm not joking. He really did. I don't know if you all know who Oral Roberts is, but televangelist from the 70s, you know, just really bothered my dad that this guy would just get up there and ask people for money. He felt like people, Christians were gullible, that they would send their money to this dude, and all he had to do was say some stuff out of the Bible and some convicting words, and people were just hooked. And so I kind of grew up with that same idea, until my parents decided that they would separate and eventually divorce. And at that time, I was 14 years old when they decided to separate. My dad moved into, like, 25 miles away to the town where he worked. My mom and I stayed on this giant farm that we lived on, 2,200 acres, sheep. And we were just kind of alone out there, 10 miles out of our little town where we lived and went to high school. And I was pretty lost. I felt pretty lost. I was like, what does this mean? My parents aren't together anymore. What does that mean to me? And so I think my heart was hungry, and I was searching, and I wanted meaning in something, and it came in a kind of interesting form. Has anybody seen the film Rocky? I'm going to assume that's a yes. Okay, so the thing I saw Rocky do that was compelling for me, really intriguing, was this thing he did right before a boxing match when he's about to get just clobbered, you know? I would imagine there's some fear involved in boxing. I'm not a boxer, but I don't like getting hit, and I really don't like getting hit in the face. A lamb did that once, jumped right up into my nose, bloody nose, hours just like achy, sore. I think he probably broke it because I don't breathe right anymore, you know, something's. But it's not pleasant. And so I thought, well, he's calling on some higher power. He does this. What's that mean? What is that? It's this sign he makes. And he did it before every match. I asked my mom about it, and she said, oh, that's a Catholic thing. He's asking for a blessing. He's doing the sign of the cross. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Does that work? Is that helpful? Well, she said, I can introduce you to a priest. I know a priest. We have this Catholic retreat center in our little hometown. 2,500 people. What little town has a Catholic retreat center in it? Dorms, basketball gym, all this whole stuff in this tiny little town in the middle of nowhere. I'm like, okay, that's sure. Maybe this will be the thing. And so I meet this guy, Father Gus, gentle, sweet, sweet man, tells me about the Catholic faith and a little bit about Jesus, but this idea that somehow this Jesus would kind of help me carry my load. You know, he kind of takes some of the pressure off of me. Before long, I was getting baptized and confirmed, and I was working as a part-time altar boy. He put me right to work. I was busy. And I did that for about 2.5 years until my senior year when my parents divorced, and my dad and I moved off the farm into a 2-bedroom apartment. My mom moved to Oregon, And we were in Wisconsin, by the way, I didn't mention that. That in itself is a lost feeling. But my life changed. It flipped on its head. My dad moved with me into this apartment, but I hardly saw him because he was seeing this woman in this other town. He'd been seeing her for quite a while. I found out more recently, a really long time. So I became really, really angry. Whenever something bad would happen in my life, it was another reason not to go to church, not to participate in this meaningless activity that I'd gotten involved in. And I walked away from that. And so while I feel like I had an encounter with faith, I hadn't been changed by it yet. And I went into college angry and frustrated. I developed a whole new set of beliefs based on science and literature and philosophy and mythology. And kind of came up with a, salad bar spirituality. And then I met Laurel, my wife, who had walked away from the church. Her parents were born again, which was a dirty word in my house growing up. My dad's sister was a born again, and he had some very strong language for her. Again, this idea of, well, maybe I can change her. Well, I'd give it a try, but I loved her very much. I went to her family's house for Sunday dinners. They invited me to church. They invited me to men's retreats. Well, her father did. And they just wouldn't stop. But they never proselytized me. They never tried to get me to make a decision. They never did anything other than just be nice to me. And so 8 years into our marriage, at a Promise Keepers event, I finally, again, invited by her father, I finally decided that I would submit. Because you know what this decision is about. It's not about you getting smacked in the head with some bolt of lightning, which would be helpful. It's actually, it's about submission, isn't it? It's about saying, okay, you say this is true about you, then you're going to have to show me. It's not. It's kind of a prideful prayer, but God will meet you there. He'll answer that prayer. And he did. I walked down in the middle of this pit of probably 2,000 men in the Autzen Stadium in Eugene, Oregon. Pastor was saying the prayer, and I prayed. Something happened. I cried. I don't know why, but I did. I felt something. But that was the beginning of a very, very different experience of God than what I had experienced before. So fast forward about 11 years, I am pretty involved in the church now. I'm here in Chico. I've got family. And I've been working with a variety of different people. I've been mentored by a guy that I love very much. He's now in Southern California, Gary Casucci. I don't know anybody knows him, but he was an incredible influence on my life. And he was the first one to invite me to play on a worship team, which I continue to do today. He said, hey, Carl, call me from Huntington Beach. I have this really cool opportunity. Maybe you'd be interested. I want to go on this 3-week trip to Ukraine. And I was like, I think maybe my passport is still valid. I don't know. It doesn't really appeal to me offhand. But he said, hey, we're going to play music. I was like, oh, what? He's like, shh. And the hook, oh, okay, music. I'm going to play music. I'm going to play guitar. I get to sing some of my songs that I'd written and do ministry. And so I went. And in the process of doing this, I learned some pretty amazing things. I'm going to refer to my notes because I don't want to miss anything. It was a life-changing event in my life. So I'm going to go back 1 second and say this. I thought once I received grace, once I submitted to Christ, that I was good. I didn't think I needed to do anything. It's a free gift, right? I'm not obligated. I could just do whatever I want. Christ has got me. I kind of think I learned that in a different place, but that's kind of what I went into it with. But I had this nagging in my heart, right? Because I read the Bible. And it's not what I see Jesus saying. It's not what he's telling me when I read it. The stuff he's telling me is, die to yourself. He's saying, go. He's saying it's easier for a camel. This one really tore me up. It's easier for a camel to fit through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to get into heaven. Wow, what is rich? What does rich look like? How rich is that? How rich is rich? If I'm, teacher making an average American salary, is that a rich guy? Or does that qualify? How do you know? These things just kind of tormented me. Maybe I'm weird. I don't know. Well, I'm definitely. There's something going on. But so this mentor asks me to go, and it's kind of reluctantly I go. And I go on this trip, and I meet these people. This is not a familiar experience for me. Undoubtedly, these are things that I've experienced time and time again since then, but they never get old. But you meet people that kind of blow your mind. And it's not just the people you're ministering to. It's the people you're working alongside. Because every short-term mission is about going to help a ministry that's already in place. You don't have to know everything when you go on this. They're going to tell you what to do. They're going to take you where they want you to go. They're going to give you a handful of flyers, or they're going to tell you to move some chairs, something. They're going to give you something to do. So don't worry about that if that's your concern about mission. But the thing is, these trips are filled with people that just make my jaw drop. They are the people that you've been working alongside for 16 hours until it's midnight and you're driving home to your host home, and they're singing worship songs in chorus, in harmonies in the car, packed into a van, shoulder to shoulder, and they're singing all the way home. There are stories like the former Soviet officer who used to send Christian soldiers under his charge to the gulag because he wanted to just mess with them. And it's also about stories of that same man who, because of the disaster at Chernobyl, his son developed leukemia. And that same man's son was then later healed in a prayer service by the Lord. And his life was changed forever. And he became not only a believer, but a pastor of several churches. And he drives around in this 1950 Lada. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's like the car your child draws in kindergarten. It's like tick, 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 tick. And he's like, yeah, I had to get that fixed. It took me 3 years to earn the money to do it, but it's working. From being a Soviet officer. It's about being in a place where they've erected a tent to build a church in the future on faith that used to be a Soviet missile base. Get this. The missiles that were housed on that site were called Satan missiles. They were directed at the United States. They were intercontinental ballistic missiles. Now all completely dedicated by the government to be used as a church. I saw God at work when I was over there, and it took my breath away, and I was never the same. And I came back, and I was working as a teacher, and it was a good thing. I was working in Oroville at the community day school, a hard job, a noble job, right? Teaching is a noble job. But for me, something was not complete, and I started to pursue something else. In the midst of that, I met Chris. He and I started working at Paradise Charter Middle School the same year he got hired, and then he hired me. And what a great job. What a great place to be. What a great ministry that is. But I still felt like God was calling me to do something different. I could have stayed. I wanted to stay. A lot of me did want to stay. But there was that thing, you know? That thing was just like calling me. I needed to do something else. So the seed that was planted in Ukraine, maybe even in Autzen Stadium that day, had grown into something that needed to be cultivated, and I needed to respond for that to happen, or I was going to stagnate, and it wasn't going to happen. So we emailed some good friends of ours, Steve and Lori Kramer. They lived down in Biggs, walnut farmers who had done the same thing. They had left the walnut farm. They'd gone to serve at this school, Rift Valley Academy. And while I was raising support to do this trip to Ukraine, Steve comes up to me and says, hey, have you ever thought about teaching in Kenya? I was like, no, I really haven't. Thank you. No, man, because, you know, for me, Kenya was about malaria. It was about poverty. It was about uncomfortable, dirty. I had no idea. I had this picture in my head from the nightly news, man, I didn't have any idea what Africa was like. I got to just on a side note here say I've never felt safer anywhere but in Kenya. And I know there have been things that happen there, but those are things that make the news. Kenya's a wonderful place, and I've never felt in danger there. But to get back to this this idea here, I wrestled with this idea of being a missionary and of leaving everything behind and of God making me go to do this thing that I didn't really want to do that was like hard. And couldn't I just lead worship? Couldn't I just be a teacher? Couldn't I just own a house and have a family? Just be a normal person? Why do I have to go do this thing? And I was literally saying those words to God. I was literally talking to him that I'm so glad that he's gracious and kind and patient. He's not up there waiting to smack me. That's good. One day I was out in my backyard in Paradise. I was chopping wood. I was just grumbling, angry. A lot of wood in Paradise, so I could have done that for a long time. There was. And my wife comes out, says, "Carl, I want to talk to you." I'm like, "Okay, what?" Keep in mind, at this point in the process, the Africa Inland Mission application has been sitting on my kitchen counter for about 2 months, waiting for me to do something with it. We'd met with a guy. We'd done the online application. They were wanting us to move to the next step, and I was like, I don't know. She said, "Carl, what if God isn't making you do this?" Yeah, of course he is. This is not my plan. He's like, "What if he's just saying, Carl, I've got this for you. Do you want it? Would you just trust me?" And that really changed things for me. And I want to read a passage that really kind of goes along with this. It's from Hebrews 11, verse 8 through 10. Which I thought I had on my phone already queued. He says, "By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, he went to live in the land of promise as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God." I think what I was wrestling with was this idea that I was not adequate for the job that God was asking me to go do. I thought, what could you possibly do with me in Kenya? And what I realized from that passage is it's not about me. It's not about what I can do. I don't have anything to give. I don't have any skills that are remotely valuable in what God is trying to do with the universe. Thank you. But God has given me an opportunity to do something unique and special that actually fit who I was. He knows me intimately. He knows what's important to me. He knows what's nagging me when I read the Bible. He knows it. He was saying, "Carl, you want to try this out? Come. I'll show you something you've never seen before. And I bet you're going to learn something." I guess if there's anything I want to share with you today from this and this testimony, which is so close to me, so important to me, is that missions are not for the superhero Christian. They're not. There are none. And if they're telling you are, or they appear that they are, beware. Beware. There's something going on that you don't see. I think I said that this has been a bittersweet trip, this visit, this last week, of counting the cost, of remembering what I left behind and who I left behind, more importantly, and the feeling and split in a million places. But I did. That is the cost. That is the cost of doing what we're called to do. I was talking with Mr. Reed, Chris here, earlier this week about living in the gray area and this idea, you know, we struggle with issues in our communities. We have a significant issue with homeless people in Chico, and we struggle, right? Because it's not an easy answer. We don't have the solution in our minds of what to do, how to help. And we're tempted to even be annoyed and irritated because we're messing up our fine city. It's not beautiful when there's all these people camped out in it. I tell you, I come from Salem, Oregon right now, and it's twice the problem you have. You would not believe the number of homeless in the rain, living under the awnings of the mall downtown. As you drive by, they're just lined up. It's a huge problem, and I don't have an answer. And I bet you don't either. And yet I feel compelled to feel concern. I feel compelled to care. What do you do with that? How do you deal with that? I wish I could tell you I knew. But I think that's something we're called to do. Sometimes we're called to live in the tension between what we know is right and how the world really is. We live in there. We live in between the tension of nothing and everything. Of nothingness and everything. God's eternity. We live there. That's where we are right now. And we have this one time, this short little period, just like I have this short period today to talk to you about this and share this deep message that I have. We don't want to waste our time. We don't want to lose the opportunity that God's given us. He's not going to make you do anything. And what a shame if you don't take him up on his offers. What a shame if I hadn't gone, if I hadn't said yes. I'm sure life would have been fine. I still would have gotten to meet the Lord one day. It's not a salvation issue. It's about an abundant life issue. It's about answering the call that God has for you. He's given each of us something unique. He's given us something to share. It doesn't have to be overseas. It doesn't have to be anything extravagant. Quite honestly, most of the time, my big gift to the project is just showing up. Yeah, I'm a warm body. Yeah. Trained my whole life for it. But it's encouraging, isn't it? You don't have to be a superhero because there aren't any. You just have to be obedient. And obedience isn't about doing all the right stuff all the time. We do the best we can, but we also live in the tension and gray area between doing the right thing and our flesh that wants to do its own thing. Man, I would love to move back here, buy a piece of land, buy a lake, have a few extra rooms, maybe a couple extra houses for my family to live in, and all my friends could be within walking distance, and I could just hang out. We have barbecues every day. That would be, oh. If I think about the perfect life, that would be it right there. I don't even care what I'm driving or any of that stuff. I guess I got to pay for the barbecue. But look, you know, we'll get to do that. We'll get to do that. That's going to happen. It's not probably going to happen here. And if that's the thing you're seeking here, you're missing out. You're missing out. There's something much, much better right here because the kingdom is already here. So I just want to encourage you, ask God to show you how to use what he's given you. Ask God to direct your steps. Expect to be uncomfortable, but also expect to be tremendously blessed beyond your wildest imagination. Thanks. Yeah.